Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, the only show that takes a look at the obstacles and opportunities open to small to mid-sized enterprises that manufacture here in America. Brought to you by All Metals and Forge Group, with your hosts, Tim Grady and Lou Wise.
Welcome, everyone, to Manufacturing Talk Radio. My name is Tim Grady. I'm here with my co-host, Lou Wise. And we're going to be talking about the skills gap today. We have three guests on the show that come to us from various areas of expertise, and we look forward to their input. When we come back from some comments from Lou, I'll set the stage on what this skills gap in manufacturing is all about. And then we'll go to our guests and let them answer some questions that we have about how we're going to correct that problem. Lou, how are you today? And you've got some news for us on a postscript to last week's show.
Yeah, we had a remanufacturing show last week. We had Caterpillar on the show, and they talked about remanufacturing of their products, and we learned some very interesting things about old products that are 90 years old that they've refigured and remanufactured, and they're still operating out in the field. So it was a very interesting show. They talked about sustainability of products, and certainly a worthwhile show to go back and listen to. That was last Tuesday. Regarding news, a couple of news bits that came up today, actually, and was printed in USA Today, and some of it was as a result of a Georgetown University survey. And some interesting stats regarding the 6 million jobs that have been added to the economy since the Great Recession. And at 44% of them, or about 2.9 million, income on these folks are $53,000 average plus health care. Another 30% is in the $32,000 to $53,000. And 20 less than $32,000. Not great great salaries down at the bottom, but it is growing, and it gives you a sign that the economy is on the upswing. Secondarily, in automotive sector, Tesla stock is expected to rise from $252 to $465 in about 3 years, based on the fact that they are putting together through another division driverless car fleets. And they're going to be running this service in various cities around the country, and they expect this will be the reason why their stock is going to take such a jump. And if you want to look further into that, go on Google. If you put in Tesla Mobility 1.0 Urban Transport. It's an amazing story, considering they've only been in the business a couple of years. My last point, I've got a big question mark attached to it, but I'll give you the news anyway, and then I'll give you the question. General Motors may be importing a new car from China. It's called the Buick. By 2016, it's called the Envision. But it is an American car that I thought we used to make in this country. And now, not only do we borrow all kinds of money from China, we now buy our product back from the Chinese. There's something wrong with this picture. Washington, why don't you take a look at it? The unions, get involved. This is part of your job. How come we're buying an American vehicle from China? If I say anything more, I may start drooling all over myself. So, Tim, why don't you take it back over?
Yeah, we'll get into the skills gap issue. Just to give everybody some background, Deloitte Touche Tohmatsu is originally an accounting firm. Now they do a lot of business analysis, and they have a Deloitte Review issue 16 that came out in 2015, talking about help wanted American manufacturing competitiveness and the looming skills gap. The numbers break down like this. Baby boomers are beginning to retire. 2.7 million will retire over the next 10 years. Over that same time period, About 700,000 jobs will be created in manufacturing due to economic expansion. So that leaves 3.4 million jobs to be filled. They expect about 1.4 million workers to be able to fill those jobs who are technically skilled enough to fill those jobs, which leaves a vacuum of 2 million unfilled jobs. So that's the looming skills gap over the next 10 years. It's really here today. In 2011, there were some 600,000 jobs in manufacturing that were unfilled due to the fact that they couldn't find workers skilled enough to fill the job. So it's not a forecast, it's a problem that we have today, and we have three people who are going to talk about some of the solutions that they are either involved with or they've been encountering. First, we have Gardner Carrick. Gardner is Vice President of Strategic Initiatives at the Manufacturing Institute. He leads the Institute's research activities, including partnerships in internationally recognized consulting firms and the production of a regular series of reports on the issues and challenges affecting U.S. manufacturing. Gardner, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm going to come back to you in a minute and let you give us, our listeners, a little insight into what the Manufacturing Institute does. But I'd like to introduce Gail Tennant-Spack. Spack. Gail is Associate Vice President of Continuing Education and Distance Education at the New Jersey Institute of Technology. Great school, been around for 135 years in science and technology research in the state of New Jersey. She has extensive experience in the area of professional workforce development and continuing education programs, and writes and broadly presents on these subjects. Gail, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. And last, we have Mario Hernandez, who is president of the San Antonio Economic Development Foundation. He's responsible for the recruitment of new business and industry to the San Antonio metro area. And since being president since 1990, he has overseen the location of more than 350 new companies employing nearly 88,000 workers in the San Antonio metro area. Mario, congratulations and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Very glad to be with you.
Gardner, let me come to you first. The Manufacturing Institute, would you give our listeners kind of a feel for what the Manufacturing Institute is and does?
Sure. We are affiliated with the National Association of Manufacturers, and we are really their workforce development arm. So we spend a lot of time researching the issues that are impacting the workforce in manufacturing, and then designing and implementing solutions to try to address the skills gap challenges that manufacturers are facing. So that includes outreach to different populations, it includes involvement with schools, it includes real on-the-ground activities as opposed to what the National Association of Manufacturers really focuses on, which is really the kind of the policy and governance side of things that impact manufacturing.
Gail, give our listeners a feel for the New Jersey Institute of Technology, great school, and the things that you are doing there, particularly as it may relate to solving the skills gap problem.
Thank you for your words about NJIT. It is indeed a great school. With a return on investment, that was a few years ago rated number one in the country, in that the subjects we're teaching, looking at what students pay for tuition, we are a public research university. Comparing that first, the tuition with their salaries in the first year, that gave us number one. That was the data points. Because it's the STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering, and management, that this university focuses on exclusively. Related to what my small area of the university does regarding manufacturing is quite exciting, because we are focused on, in a collaborative manner, on looking at the letter T in the STEM acronym, meaning technology. That's where the majority of the jobs that you were just describing are. So I'm sure I'll be very happy to talk about some of the specific things we're doing, but I want to emphasize the T, that is really where so much of the job gap and skills gap exists today for our country.
Thanks, Gail. And Mario, I want to come to you on the San Antonio Economic Development Foundation. Give us a feel for what you've been doing there, and feel free to name drop it, because you really have a who's who's list of companies that you've helped locate in the San Antonio area.
Yes, thank you. As you'd expect, we deal in traditional economic development and recruitment of companies worldwide, but also in the local business retention and expansion, working with what we already have. In today's economic development world, though, if you're not involved directly in workforce development and even entrepreneurial activities, you're not going to be successful in economic development. Mm-hmm. It is interesting times for people in economic development because of the shift of wealth and companies around the world. A lot of that has to do with manufacturing, and we've been very fortunate in San Antonio, not a big manufacturing center in San Antonio, but we've been very fortunate to see an influx of a lot of new manufacturing, particularly in aerospace and automobile over the last few years. But it is a challenge for us to fill those mid-level occupations that are an industry-wide, if not an international problem in filling. So it becomes a big part of economic development.
Yes, it certainly is. Those technical positions are terrifically difficult to fill right now. This, Gail, is what you're involved in on a day-to-day basis. What is NJIT doing to help answer the pain in the manufacturing marketplace?
Well, we're actually doing two or three related activities. We call them the three M's, which is about rebirthing manufacturing, specifically and focused on New Jersey, because we are a public research university in our state, but also on the nation. So there is a coincidence on the program names that all begin with an M. So we're not talking about the 3M Corporation. We're talking about 3Ms for manufacturing. The first one is a program called the Advanced Manufacturing Talent Network that I have had the privilege of being the steward for over the last 4 years for the state of New Jersey. And this one is about connecting across horizontally all the stakeholders in our state and beyond that have anything to do with supplying this workforce or talent gap. So what does this mean? It means we regularly interact with the still remaining some 11,000 manufacturers in New Jersey, all of which are small, mostly all of which are small and mid-sized firms. We connect what they say is their workforce needs with people who are, for example, out of work from other industries in New Jersey. We connect with the educators who are not teaching the right thing to fill the workforce gap, and we're helping them to change their curriculum. We are affecting and interacting with the policymakers and the nonprofits. So think about the person who is the director of the Advanced Manufacturing Talent Network as a spider in the middle of a web, but a good spider, not a poisonous spider, that is bringing in all the other stakeholders. So that's what this talent network is all about, and has been quite effective since we've been doing this for 4 years in strategic locations of the state where there is assets, strong assets, and support and enthusiasm for manufacturing. The second M is a program called MechaForce. It's one word. That's our name for it, MechaForce. But it's all about apprenticeships and mechatronics education and training. Mechatronics is a new discipline that combines electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, and IT, and they're calling it mechatronics or advanced manufacturing. So this is the 3D printing you're hearing about and the robotics and the automation and these amazing machines, equipment that are in advanced manufacturing firms across America and the world. This program has actually worked for the last year, funded entirely by the manufacturers in our state. So no government money, obviously some from NJIT, which I would call sweat equity, and academic instructors, but it's really industry funded. And this, we have listened to what the manufacturers have said, and we have created a mechatronics curriculum that takes students all the way from earning an associate's degree, even possible in high school, to getting industry certification, to getting a job, and if one wishes, a clear path with no loss of time or money towards a Bachelor of Science in Engineering Technology Mechatronics degree. So that's the second M. The third M is something that NJIT created in 1996, which is the New Jersey Manufacturing Extension Program. It is a one of 59 in the country, and I know Mario must work with your Texas MEP, Gardner, you know that, obviously, we all know about the MEPs. This is the one in the state of New Jersey, and they are focused on the leadership of the manufacturing firms in our state to get them to understand how they can change their processes, their design, their management principles so they can stay alive. So those are the three M's, and we're working all of them, juggling balls in the air, because the solution to this workforce gap is it's going to take everyone from every different lens working together. The three M's.
Thank you for the answer. It's I would like to ask the question about how do all of your entities and all of the duties and responsibilities you have actually reach out into the manufacturing facility itself. I know Manufacturing Day is coming upon us, and this is going to be the fourth year for that, which we'll talk about later in the show, because we also are very much involved in that. But how are you all reaching out to get into the manufacturers to show them there's another way? And I'd like you to expand on that.
I'd be happy to. For example, in the Advanced Manufacturing Talent Network, at least one manufacturer is visited every week of the year by the director of that talent network, exploring what they need, understanding that they're so desperate for workforce that they are poaching each other's companies. So this is a personal visit to the manufacturers in our state. We also ran, I'm just giving like last year, some of last year's highlights. There is a Makers Day phenomena, maker spaces occurring across the country, and we ran one for the state of New Jersey in participation and collaboration with the public libraries of the state. And there were 17,000 attendees in 150 different locations where manufacturers came in to show what can be done with your hands and the fun of makerspaces. We use websites, we use social media, we use Twitter to absolutely spread information into the companies. So that's, I hope that's an example of what we are talking. It's not just sitting in an ivory tower and thinking about how we can solve the problem. We are in these companies.
Well, that's fantastic, and I feel as though that Manufacturing Talk Radio is doing similarly by being able to interact with manufacturers, owners, the shop floor to the C-suite levels. And I'd like to hear from Gardner as well as Mario as to what you're doing in actually reaching into the manufacturing facility itself.
Sure. So I think there's a couple good examples. First of all, we've been trying to connect manufacturers with the school systems that are really supplying the talent. So that can mean several different opportunities for connection. It can mean something as simple as offering tours, like on Manufacturing Day. It can mean actually setting up an internship program where they take students from a class for part of the summer or the school year. It can be actually a full-blown apprenticeship program where they partner with the school system over a multi-year period to have a learn and earn model to train their new workforce. So that's kind of on the education front. On the what we call the attraction side, really trying to get students interested in manufacturing, we've been working on an ambassador program where you take kind of the younger members of the current workforce in manufacturing, the millennials who are already working at companies, and make them the spokespersons for the industry in their community. So they're the ones that get to go into schools to talk about their careers, go to job fairs and be the face of manufacturing. And really show individuals, students, that there is there are career opportunities in manufacturing, and that that person is a role model or an example of someone that was in their position not too many years before and now has a job and a career at a manufacturing facility. So our goal has really been trying to get the manufacturers more personally and intimately engaged in the solutions to solving the skills gap. We spent a number of years really working just on the college and high school side trying to improve and expand their programs, and I think we've made tremendous progress on that. So now it's really about getting manufacturers in their communities to really be a part of those solutions, both from the education side and from the marketing and attraction side.
Mario, let me pose a question to you. I'm a manufacturer. I'm coming into San Antonio, or I'm looking at San Antonio as a possible area to relocate my company. I'm going to need a couple of hundred technical people to fill the jobs that I'm bringing to San Antonio, and I sit down with you and I say, Mario, finding them. How do you answer the question?
Well, first thing is that the workforce development and training system, of course, has a seat at our in our process of recruitment and local business retention and expansion, as all communities have that. But I think we've gone a step further in San Antonio, where we can point to a system that reaches down to the junior and senior level in high schools. And we term that system the Alamo Academies, and we have a system for academy for manufacturing, but we also have a specific academy for aerospace as an example. Mm-hmm. And what we do there is, and we're working both sides. We're educating the kids that it's okay to go into manufacturing, and by the way, you go half day, and then the other half day you go to the Alamo Academy, either aerospace or manufacturing. You go half day to school, and the other half day you go to the academy. And also we guarantee them a summer internship at a manufacturer. And this is the hook for us for the Boeings and the Toyotas and the Caterpillars and all the major manufacturers that we have there, because they provide the summer job for the kids, and in 2 years, when they're ready, they either go on to college. They have 1 year's of college credit earned in the program, and they can elect to go directly to work for Boeing, or they can go on to an associate's degree or some type of certificate. Of course, we utilize the associations, the San Antonio Manufacturers Association, in the process. We have a strong industry roundtable system where we bring together the chiefs of industry in manufacturing and engage them and keep them active in the process of in particular workforce development. We just finished a new, what we term the talent pipeline study, and it went beyond manufacturing into ITIS and also healthcare and biosciences, which all have their difficulties with certain occupations. But once we paint the picture, and by the way, we can do customized training, and we can do just-in-time training for companies. And when we paint that picture, it's a strong picture, because when you think about what manufacturing is in the U.S. these days, it's more regional in nature. It's getting closer to your customer. It's operating from lower-cost areas, operating from areas that have the infrastructure that that you need, including the skill and talent, or at least the development of those skills. So it's a complete picture that we try to paint for the prospect or for the local company.
Gardner, to you for a moment. I know that you have a certification program. The Institute of Supply Management that we work with often has a certification program that they've just updated. Quite exciting. I'd like you to share with our listeners the Manufacturing Institute certification program.
Sure. We actually took a slightly different approach. So what we did was, rather than start our own, that is an NAM or Manufacturing Institute branded certification, we went out and took a look at the existing certifications in the manufacturing market space, and then endorsed the ones that we thought were the best, that offered an independent look at it, a industry-sponsored, a third-party validated, you know, a number of different kind of criteria that we applied. And then we selected, well, we're ultimately 15 organizations to endorse, and then we've spent the last several years really trying to take those credentials and embed them into what are traditional education pathways. Mm-hmm. So that if you're in a welding program at a community college, you are going to have the opportunity to earn a certification from the American Welding Society. In effect, it's the final exam of that program. And that if the students in that program are not able to earn that, then that program needs to improve to the level that those students are able to earn it, because that is the industry standard in welding. Similarly, it gives manufacturers kind of a confidence that there's a consistent level of quality coming from graduates of that program. So we found it to be a nice benchmark for programs to be able to meet. And then finally, when we looked at other industries that have industry-based credentials, we found that there was a prestige that was attached to them. You look at IT in particular, and those individuals that achieve Microsoft or Cisco or Oracle certifications are really very proud of those, and they carry a prestige on their resume in the workplace that we would love to replicate for the credentials in manufacturing. Mm-hmm. So that's the program that we've been working on. We've been at it for 3 or 4 years now, and we have over, I believe it was 120,000 credential certifications from the groups that we endorsed issued last year. So you're talking about a pretty big sample size here as well.
Yeah. And I would add...
Yeah, Gail, please go ahead.
Yeah, this very important topic that's just come up about these certifications. The approach that we've taken is to focus on one of the many skill sets that are needed in the U.S. in manufacturing today. And I've mentioned it earlier. It was the advanced manufacturing and Mecaforce. So we've done a deep dive there. But what we're hearing with our feet on the ground, being in these companies, is a challenge for all of us on the phone right now. That the actual manufacturers are not seeing the same value as we all do in giving these industry credentials. So there is work to be done to convince the manufacturers that this person should be hired beyond someone else who has these credentials. I strongly believe in them, in the Mecaforce mechatronics area. We're using one of Gardner's certifications in this area, which is NIMS. So a program that we're doing will give the NIMS certification if that's what's needed. But we're not seeing it on the industry side yet. So work is ahead of us to make that happen. But I'd also like to comment on some interesting things happening in New Jersey about mechatronics as an area. In the middle school, we have a brand, just this fall it opened, a career and technical education middle school called Explore 2000 that is totally project-oriented. So it's a little bit different than a regular middle school or junior high, as it's called across the country. This one, the youngsters are learning doing projects, and it's focused on mechatronics. It has the equipment already, which is such an important piece of how you get youngsters and those wanting to come into this career to learn about, because so much of what's needed in the manufacturing area today requires some hands-on as well as formal learning. That's the apprenticeship type model. But you have to have the equipment, and it's very, very expensive, and no manufacturer will have downtime to teach people on it. They have to meet their bottom line. So this is a middle school that is focused on being a feeder to a high school, which is a called high-tech high school and a blue ribbon career and technical education high school in Hudson County in New Jersey, that already has 345 ninth and 10th graders in a program that could potentially get them into this field. So, but we're building the pipeline for this. So I thought that would be an interesting thing to add to this conversation about credentials, because we're producing them along with degrees, but we need work with the manufacturers on understanding how important they are.
Well, I brought up my point about 5-10 minutes ago about what are you all doing, as well as other associations, about getting into the manufacturers. It seems as though that there's a lot of people doing a lot of good getting kids interested in manufacturing, realizing that it's not all oil slicks on the floor, and you don't have to wear rubber boots to make sure that steel filings don't go through your shoes. It seems that we're all doing a pretty good job on getting kids involved, but the manufacturer, he's so used to Charlie out on the third CNC machine. Of course, Charlie's been there for 35 years. You don't have to tell Charlie what to do, and Charlie's going to be retiring in a couple of years. So I guess my question then, and my continuing question, which we can come back to, but we're going to be taking a break in a moment, is how do we get the manufacturer to accept the fact that Charlie's leaving one way or another, feet first or head first? He's leaving. And they've got to get into the mindset that they're going to be hiring kids or young adults who don't have all of the skill sets, and that's going to come with a period of time. I think they should be fortunate to recognize that at least they're getting kids involved. And, you know, the millennials will go off and do their college thing and go off to the Fortune 500, but without a doubt, this country needs manufacturing, even though we're only, I think, at 18% manufacturing. Just for our own security, safety, homeland security, and so on. We need manufacturing kids and manufacturing companies to really delve into this and build up that base. We'll get back to that. We're going to break for a commercial moment, and we'll talk to you on the other side of the commercial. Thank you.
Manufacturing Talk Radio will be right back.
How do you keep your business humming? Where do you go when you're looking for quality suppliers of new equipment? Components, MRO supplies, repair services, or even raw materials. 30 years ago, you would have turned to the Thomas Register. Today, those big green books are better than ever at thomasnet.com, industry's leading platform for product sourcing and supplier discovery. You can easily find that local machine shop, national distributor, OEM, or any supplier having the right quality certification. Fast and free. You can even get to specific products, components, or downloadable 3D CAD drawings simply by entering specifications or part numbers. There's a reason ThomasNet.com has become the go-to supplier discovery tool for procurement professionals and engineers. There's simply no other resource like it, and it's all free. Go to ThomasNet.com today and see how top-notch supplier discovery doesn't have to put a dent into your bottom line.
American Crane and Equipment Corporation in Douglasville, Pennsylvania is a leader in specialized cranes, hoists, and material handling equipment for industries including aerospace, nuclear, oil and gas, transit, construction, and waste handling. Call 877-877-6778 or visit AmericanCrane.com. That's AmericanCrane.com or 877-877-6778.
All Metals and Forge Group is an ISO 9001 AS and EN 9100 manufacturer of open die forgings and seamless rolled rings in alloy, carbon, stainless and tool steels, aluminum, copper, titanium, and nickel alloys. Visit us at steelforge.com or call 800-600-9290.
Welcome back to Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone, to Manufacturing Talk Radio. My name is Tim Grady. I'm here with my co-host, Lou Weiss. Lou Weiss's company, All Metals and Forge Group, is the sponsor of Manufacturing Talk Radio and makes the show possible, and we want to thank you for that, Lou. We are talking about the skills gap here today, and we are speaking with Mario Hernandez, president of the San Antonio Economic Development Foundation, Gardner Carrick, who is Vice President of Strategic Initiatives for the Manufacturing Institute, and Gail Tennant-Spack, who is Associate Vice President of Continuing and Distant Education for the New Jersey Institute of Technology. We were talking about previously, Lou's question really was to the transfer of tribal knowledge, trying to move, you know, what the baby boomer has learned over the last 30 or 40 years in an operation to someone who's just coming into the organization. Let me go to Gardner on that and see what kind of insight he can provide from the Manufacturing Institute's perspective on that. Gardner?
Yeah, so unfortunately there's no easy answer to that conundrum. I mean, I think that there are a couple of things happening. Number one, companies are recognizing that those people are in fact about ready to walk out the door, as you said. So they are really trying to engage in some solutions to get people in the door. Now, that doesn't directly solve the problem of how do you capture 35 years worth of experience and knowledge out of that person that's about to retire and transfer it within your organization. I have seen companies that do a pretty good job of call it mentorship programs that really aren't just about career advancement, but really about knowledge transfer. So how do you essentially train someone in a relatively informal fashion about of how to react to and work a process that is inherently experiential. So, like I said, though, there's no formula from which to do this. So what you end up actually seeing is companies, when that expertise does finally leave the door, to look for alternatives to that approach. So that would be, rather than trying to find a new pattern maker at your foundry, they go and they buy a 3D printer and print out patterns that way. So you end up having technology replace what is a skill set that you're not able to train any longer. So there's a couple of different ways to handle that situation, and each company needs to really figure out what is the most appropriate for them and get moving on that strategy and that plan.
Gail, let me go to you on this very same topic. You're training, you know, the new young minds to go into manufacturing. How do you address the issue of the transfer of tribal knowledge?
I love that expression, the transfer of tribal knowledge. Thank you. We do it in a number of ways. First of all, what Garrett has just said about technology replacing the old way of doing things, I see happening all the time. To have that happen even more requires the kind of work that MEP does, which deals with the managers to understand that they have to take in new technology, new ways of doing what they've done before, if they're going to survive as a company. So, for example, the Manufacturing Institute runs a fabulous program called STEP, which is about advancing and acknowledging the role of women in manufacturing. It stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Production, and it focuses on women manufacturers. One of the recipients last year, one of the 130, is a woman manufacturer from New Jersey who has a very simple, wonderful product that requires a very precise rubber ball. That happens, it's one of only four materials going into this product that is being used by the NFL today to help with the back problems of some of our greatest football players. In any event, the company that manufactures this very precise rubber ball does not have the most modern equipment. Has a 71-year-old man working on a 100-year-old piece of equipment to vulcanize rubber, which is part of this process. That company could not fill this winning company's, this upcoming company's need. And I've just heard over the weekend that there will be changes because that company cannot keep this satisfy the needs of a business that needs that component. That means that the ownership of the company has to understand how they can change their equipment. Once the equipment gets changed, then it's a different set of skills and knowledge that T in technology in STEM requires. It is so much more advanced, and that's no longer your dirty factory floor. So these changes have to happen together. So that's one way of answering your question, that they are happening, but it has to be a change in the management who can afford, can think, can envision doing things a different way, and therefore who will be the workforce who will be enticed to do these kinds of so useful jobs and interesting jobs. The other way of answering is to tell you that we're not just focusing on youngsters and the future pipeline. Those of us in education have been hearing a lot about the adrift college students. That's a kind of the term being used, where many young men and women in their 20s and their 30s acquired the so needed bachelor's degree or an associate's degree, but are not working in the field, can't get a job in the field that they acquired that degree in. They're working behind the counter somewhere. So we are working to reach the adrift population, older, to say, hey, you have some of the needs, background from your general courses in school, in college, to be able to excel in the new world of manufacturing. So we'll teach you a little bit more, and you can fill these kinds of gaps. So I just didn't want you to think we're just dealing with the pipeline. We think the adrift population and women will be a very, very good market to help our manufacturers stay alive. So that's some of the examples of how we're addressing this, along with the question of the five generations at work right now, which is across all boards, not just manufacturing, where there's different kinds of training and education we're providing to help facilitate the communication between the existing and aging workforce with younger employees of all ages. So it's a lot of work to be done.
I'd like to throw a plug in for Manufacturing Talk Radio, being that you gave me the cue. And that is
my
that
pleasure.
Thank you. Next week, our show is about women manufacturing. And it's going to be a two-part series. And part one will be next week, and two will be, I believe, 2 weeks after that. And we're going to be talking with Allison Grellis, president of the Women in Manufacturing Association, mm-hmm. along with Karen Norheim, executive vice president of American Crane, who inherited her position. She didn't want to be in manufacturing. Her father, I'm not sure, but she inherited it, and she's enjoying the work that she's doing, never thinking that a woman in manufacturing could appreciate the work that's being done. So thank you for allowing me this plug, and Tim?
Mario, as you talk to manufacturers coming into the San Antonio area, since we're talking about Manufacturing Talk Radio, I realize there are a lot of different companies coming into the San Antonio area, but as you talk about manufacturers, do they have this challenge of this transfer of tribal knowledge because really they're creating a lot of new jobs, or are they bringing employees over from other states so they're going to experience the challenge?
It's a challenge both for the new company coming in because it is a national problem in certain occupations, and it's a challenge for the existing companies. You know, one thing that we're have found very helpful is through our local business retention and expansion program. So the program that deals with local manufacturers and getting them to realize, for example, the number of employees that they have that will retire soon. So we've taken the data in our talent pipeline initiative beyond counting of how many people are employed in that particular occupation and postings and likely need, taking that further to lay out the retiree that will have the retirements that will occur over a short period of time, so they get a more complete picture. The other thing through our business retention and expansion program, you don't get these companies to the table easily, and we all know that. We're the government, or we're the, in our case, the private nonprofit, and we're here to help doesn't work. And so a complete package of not only having the correct team with you in these calls, but also the specific menu of what you can do. In other words, we can say to them, all right, we're gonna understand your workforce to this depth. And by the way, the incentives that you typically hear applied to new companies coming in, they apply to you as well. And that's not just tax abatements and financial grants, but it's also the workforce development and training funds that are out there applied to you. So with that kind of detail, we're able to engage the local company as well as the new company coming in and help them. The other thing we're doing is, you've got to have stackable credentials. You've got to have stackable programs, because you're not going to solve the problems of Toyota. Toyota has famously likes to say here they have 2,000 direct employees. They have 6,000 on campus with their suppliers. They like to say up there 2,000 direct employees. 200 are management level, no problem getting those. 1,700 of those are line production employees, no problem with those. It's that middle gap and those occupations in that middle gap, 100 or 200 that are so hard to fill. Well, we've developed a program for them specifically that they hire the person, but in year one, they learn certain things. In year two, they learn certain things. They get up to that level where they can replace the journeyman But it's going to take time because it's all about experience. And if the employer, most of the employers that are willing to stick to that process and make this applicable, we're finding success.
Mario, let me go to you on kind of two sides of a coin. In 2008, you were named one of the top 100 most influential Hispanics in Business Magazine. Let's talk about the Hispanics for a moment. One side of the coin is Hispanics in the U.S. Going into manufacturing jobs. Is that a strong population on which manufacturers in the San Antonio area can rely?
It is, but it hasn't been easy. Just like all other young kids, the Hispanic is pushed towards college, even though many of them will not attend college, and not towards the I'm an old timer, call it the vocational occupations that ultimately develop into the people that we need at these mid-level production facility. So it is a challenge. It's been an advantage to us because it is a very young population, and you know the average age of a Hispanic female is going to be almost 7 years younger than an Anglo female, and when you have a population of that's 58% Hispanic, it attracts the attention of the companies along with the training programs. You can bring their skills up, and also it's an advantage to us because of they're going to be the consumer of the future. That's growing so rapidly, particularly in Texas, where the population of the Hispanic and certainly in San Antonio already looks like what the country will look like in terms of minority population. So from that perspective, it's also an advantage. There's a need for Toyota to develop Hispanic talent across the board because their next plant is going to be in Mexico and then possibly in South America. And there's a lot of movement to the south of us, so an advantage from not only a workforce growth perspective, but also from a market perspective.
Well, the other flip side of that coin is what's known here as nearshoring, and that is the manufacturer looking at where do I locate my plant? Do I put it in San Antonio or Los Angeles or Keokuk, Iowa or Nogales, Mexico?
Yes.
How do you respond to the manufacturer who looks at those options and say to them, you really ought to be in San Antonio?
It's a numbers game. You're not, if it's a wire harness assembler, the percentage of direct low-skill labor is very high in your product, then you're not going to compete. You're looking at a $3 fully burdened wage in some of the Mexican communities that are in close proximity to San Antonio. Now, if it's more capital intensive, if it's dependent on a sophisticated infrastructure, on power, we're going to supply a manufacturer with 6 cents, power per kilowatt hour, and it's going to be reliable, dependable. In Mexico, they can't get that. So, you look at it's a balancing act. I mean, what makes sense? Where can a company take chances and produce in another country solely on the savings of direct labor versus their need for market access versus infrastructure and higher skilled and more capital intensive types of investments? So it depends on the case, and quite frankly, we've just seen a lot more movement from China. There's more coming back to the U.S. because the rates are going higher, labor rates in those countries, and the advantages that a U.S. market, certainly from a stable investment standpoint, we're viewed as one of the more stable countries for investment. That has to count for a lot.
I can add to that and totally agree with what's just been said. At the beginning of this show, there was some mention about a Buick, building a Buick in China. But I think a good coda to that is recently the Boston Consulting Group said that by year 2018, the U.S. will have a lower cost, will be a lower cost producer of manufacturing goods than China. And my talent network director last year met a German banker who stated that it's cheaper to produce a BMW in America today and ship it to Europe than it is to make it in Europe. And we also heard the same thing from the German consulate in New York. There is something going on, but what we're hearing about the reluctance to open new plants, whether they be global manufacturers in the U.S., has to do with where is the workforce. That's what we've been saying. So it's a game. It's not a game. It's a challenge to really race to be able to produce from all sectors of our economy, Hispanic, disabled, women, men, workforce for this industry, which could really boom again here, we believe.
Several weeks ago, we did a show about aerospace in Mexico. In doing that show, we discovered that there are approximately 460 aerospace manufacturing companies now in Mexico. A lot of which have moved from California, some from Texas, but we also had somebody on from Texas, and I don't recall at the moment who it was, who said that the relationship between Texas and Mexico, aerospace-wise, that you're working together. His name was... it's escaping me, but they were talking about relationship and Texas as a good one, as a partnership. Do you feel that is the case, Mario?
I do. There's a lot of synergism with Mexican production, and since NAFTA 20 years ago opened up things. I mean, that you're as apt to get a European company producing a component for auto or for aircraft or auto in San Antonio, shipping it into Mexico, as you are the opposite, to have a component manufacturer in Mexico ship up to San Antonio to the Boeing facility here. So it's more prevalent right now in auto. It's just exploding, the movement of auto and auto products to Mexico and this part of the country, but aerospace can't be far behind because of the demand there are for aircraft future.
Surely. We only have about two more minutes to go, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask you all to give us your contact information for our listeners if they wanted to get in touch with you. So we are now at under 2 minutes, so if you can just quickly give us your either URL or your email address for the benefit of our listeners.
Mario, how about yours?
Yeah, let me give you my email. It's Mario H at San Antonio EDF. San Antonio EDF is one word, .com. That's my direct email.
Thank you. And Gail?
Mine, I hope, is easy. It's four letters, my last name, S like Sam, P like Peter, A, K like Kelly, at njit.edu.
That's easy. And Gardner?
Sure. Email is gcarrick, C-A-R-R-I-C-K, at nam.org, or you can reach me through the manufacturinginstitute.org website.
We appreciate everyone being on the show. We certainly want to thank our guests. Gardner, thank you.
Thank you.
And Gail, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Mario, thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
That wraps us up today for Manufacturing Talk Radio. We will be back again next week.
Thanks for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can hear our next broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at mfgtalkradio.com.